It's the sound I went to sleep by whenever I spent the night at my grandparents' home. It was the sound of the West Bend clock that was on the bedstand. It was the rhythm that lulled me to sleep, and the ticking kept on all night long until the smell of bacon and buckwheat pancakes woke me the following morning. Now, I was too young to understand what the ticking meant. I thought that the ticking just kept going on and on, just like a flowing stream ebbed on and on to wherever it was going. I didn't realize at the time that that ticking signified a countdown, that there's only so much time before you have to get up and have to go to school or have to go to work or go to church or where it is that you need to get up to be going to. The countdown, you see, means that time is limited. There is only so much of it. And some of us get more and some of us get less for reasons that we simply do not know. Seconds, T minus 15 before liftoff. Today is the deadline for that big project you have at work. There's 40 seconds to go in the game. Andrew Luck has the ball on the 20. Must go 80 yards to score a touchdown and win by one. There is a decision that you have to make that you've been putting off for a long time because you don't want to make it, but now you must make it. The doctor tells you that you do not have very long to live, and that you must get your affairs in order, say the things that need to be said to those to whom you need to say it. Five, four, three, two, one, liftoff. Now, after the sermon, we're going to sing a hymn, and there's a verse from it that goes, "Time, like an ever-flowing stream, soon bears us all away. We fly, forgotten as a dream dies at the opening day." And you say, "Oh, why are we singing that? That is so depressing." But, you know, I must talk about this. You see, it's my calling. Because every day I'm aware that more and more sand sifts through the hourglass, which means we need to make today count for something, that we can't waste time, and especially how tragic it is when we say, "I'm going to kill some time," because you see, the time that you're killing is your own. Our return trip from Hawaii made me reassess my understanding of time. I will no longer say, or I will try to refrain from saying, "Relax, we've got plenty of time." I especially will not say that in airports. We had gotten in from Maui to Los Angeles at 6:30 in the morning. I hadn't been able to sleep the whole time. We were all groggy, and after we made sure that everyone was accounted for, we moved off to Gate 68, where we were going to spend a little over 2 hours waiting for the next flight. And so I said, "Sue, would you please watch my backpack? I'm going to the men's room. I'll be right back." That's what I said. "I'll be right back." Well, the terminal was undergoing a renovation, which made getting around a little more difficult. I found the men's room all right, but there was a line extending outside the door. And so I went a little further, and I found another restroom. It was the same story, a line. There are never lines in men's restrooms. And so with a note of urgency, I said to a Delta employee, "Where's the closest restroom to here?" He said, "Go right down that concourse there, and you'll find it on the right. Thank you very much." And on the way down, I passed the reception area, and no one was there. I didn't think anything about it. Went into the restroom and came back, and now there was a lady in a pretty sharp-looking blue uniform sitting there, and I smiled and went on by. She said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going back to my gate, 68. She said, "Where's your boarding pass?" I said, "I don't have a boarding pass. It's on my daughter's smartphone." Well, in a delightful tone, she said, "You're going to have your daughter come here with her smartphone. That's the only way you're going to get by." "I can't. I don't have my cell phone. It's in my backpack." A Delta employee told me that this is where I could go to the men's room. She said, "Well, you're going to need a boarding pass. You're not getting beyond this point." "Where do I get a boarding pass?" "You'll have to go to Terminal 5. Go down 2 flights of escalators, turn left down Concourse C. You'll get there in about 5 minutes. Okay, a little disgruntled. And so I'm walking at a brisk pace down through the concourse to Terminal 5. Say, "No need to panic. You've got almost 2 hours here. That's plenty of time." And when I arrived at all the Delta counters, every agent was waiting on a line that was about a mile long. I said, "This will never work." And so I took my chances and talked to another Delta employee. He says, "Oh, you need to go to the special services line. That's about a block that way." So I get to special services, all right. And there are about 50 people in line ahead of me, a couple of them carrying surfboards. All of those people in that line had a problem in search of a solution. There were surfboards. There was a professional photographer there who had about 8 cases of photographic equipment. English was the minority language in that line. There were people from all over the world that were having problems with Delta Airlines, and they were all disgruntled, kind of like me. I said, "No problem. We'll get through this." There were 4 agents that were waiting on people, and they were working exceedingly slow. I think a snail on crutches would have worked at a faster pace. And now the line was 100 plus frustrated travelers long. But I kept my calm. I said, "An hour and 45 minutes. I've got plenty of time to get back." And then one of the agents held up her hand. She said, "Our shift is over now," and they walked off. Boom, they just left. And you should have heard the comments from the line bidding them farewell. And I said, "Okay, take a deep breath in. Breathe out anxiety and fear and what your wife is going to do to you when she sees you." 5 minutes pass. 10 minutes. No one in sight. And we are on the verge of a riot. And then at last, the replacement was sent. Notice I said replacement, singular. There was now one man who was going to wait on 100 plus people. The agent said next, but he said it only about every 8 minutes or so. There were 2 people ahead of me, one of the guys with the surfboard. 5 minutes go by. I've got maybe 20 minutes at best. Next, Chinese lady comes up. 5 minutes go by. Next. And I dash up to the line and I hurriedly told him what the problem was. He said, "That's no problem, Mr. Bibby. I will issue you a boarding pass." And as he's typing and looking on his screen, he said, "You may not get there." He said, "They are boarding your flight." I said, "Look, I've got to be on that flight. I need the boarding pass now. Certainly, Mr. Bibby, but I can give you your boarding pass, but I don't think you're going to make it through security. Look, I said, I don't have time. A Delta employee put me in this mess, and Delta better get me out. Believe it, I said it just like that. Certainly, Mr. Bibby. And he reaches around, he grabs some guy, he says, get him through security. I said, how's he going to get me through security? So we are running to the TSA station. It's amazing how fast a 62-year-old guy can run when he has to. And he said, it was our fault. They flagged me through. I race up two flights of escalators, a flight of stairs. I am zigzagging my way down the concourse, jumping over children in wheelchairs. I'm flattening whoever is in my way. Nothing's going to stop me. And the first thing I see is Sue, and my son-in-law has her by the arm trying to drag her to the gate. They were going to leave without me. And then I saw her face, and she saw mine. How do you describe what the look was like? I would say frantic. After she had calmed down, I will not divulge what was said in the emotion-laden conversation that followed. Let's just say that Sue lost it. And I was this close to losing it as well. Relax, there's plenty of time. Are you sure? We've got 2 hours. What could go wrong? Well, you think you've got plenty of time, but maybe not. Maybe you don't have enough time to say what needs to be said or do what needs to be done. Don't miss your flight. Tomorrow may be your grand finale to eternity. There was a college president of Morehouse College named Benjamin Elijah Hayes. And he penned this sonnet, Life is Just a Minute, only 60 seconds in it. Didn't seek it, didn't choose it, forced upon me, can't refuse it. But it's up to us to use it. We must suffer if we lose it. We must give an account if we abuse it. Just a tiny little minute, but eternity is in it. Can't you just hear the echoes of Paul? Be careful then how you live, not as the unwise, but as the wise, making the most of the time because the days are evil. Oh, we know that. Read the newspaper, sit for a half hour in front of CNN, and you know that those times are these times. But the kind of evil that Paul is talking about here is not evil on the Hitler scale. No, it's closer to home than that. We heard about it in last Sunday's lesson from Ephesians as Paul talks about all the behaviors we are to shun: fornication, impurity, greed, wrath, anger, malice, slander. Will Willimon says it's the two-bit self-destruction in which we indulge: a hardening liver, a swimming head, the tarnished lungs, that grubby little affair. What went on a weekend escapade? But I know you well enough that you're sitting there. That's not us. We don't do those kinds of things. Well, good. That's very good. But you see, all those things are just symptoms. The symptoms of a larger problem is that we, unfortunately, like the rest of the culture, don't have a sense of direction. Not only do we live as though we have no direction, but we don't live as though we have even a destination. We get blown this way and that, and we fill our lives with all kinds of junk that this stupid world tells us is good, and good for you, too. And Paul said, don't be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And there he names our sin right there. It's foolishness. We may not get hangovers from a bottle, but we sure get hangovers from busyness. And we fill our calendars with this and that, and we meet ourselves coming and going here and there for reasons we can't say, but time's a-wasting, gotta go, 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 worship, you gotta be kidding. I don't have but time to waste that precious time on something as pointless as worship. And then there's that thing called silence. Any of you like silence? I love it. But it took me a long time to love it because silence is empty, we think. But no, it's not. It's full of stuff. All kinds of things that have happened to us in the past and the relationships we have had and the grudges we nurse, all that stuff is in there, and that keeps percolating to the top. And so what do? With the silence, we fill it with music, or we listen to those hothead talk show crazies. If we're working around the house, we leave the TV on just for background noise so that we don't think too much or feel too much, so the questions don't surface, or worse yet, we are asked a question from someone else. Back in the 80s, Diana Ross sang a beautifully haunting song that I think has a fantastic God question embedded right in the middle of it. Forgive me if I butcher it. Do you know where you're going to? Do you like the things that life is showing you? Where are you going to? Do you know? You remember that song? It's a gorgeous piece, but man, what is the song saying? Do you know what's going on around you? Do you know where you're headed? Do you have any idea of the destination? Or are you, like so many others, just floundering around? Yeah, I want to tell you that we don't have to race through Concourse C like crazy people. We don't have to run about to fill up the emptiness, or have to work to make our lives count for something, or make the news work out all right, or it's not our job to make history turn all right in the end. See, we don't have to make ourselves count because Jesus already made them count. And by making us a part of that cosmic thing that God is doing in God's good time. Make the most of your days, Paul said, because the days are evil. Act as the wise and not the unwise. Realizing that it all belongs to God. Kristen Ingram said it's a blasphemy. It's an utter blasphemy to conjure up an image of God with an iPad or a laptop and a spreadsheet, with having lackeys running all around with calendars in their hands marking off, okay, this happened, oh, I'm keeping track of him, this happened. No, it's not that way at all. But she said, I need to realize that the time ultimately isn't mine. It's God's. And because God has given me this time, I must treat it with reverence. Be careful how you live, not as the unwise. Don't be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And understanding that the will of the Lord starts with a question we ask ourselves this. Am I wasting what God entrusts to me, and am I using it for that which lasts? The days are evil, but they're evil only insofar as we don't realize what a gift we have, and it's only evil if we aren't exercising that. It's only evil if we waste it and kill it and throw it all away. And so how do you know what the will of the Lord is? Well, maybe it's something as simple as taking the time to call someone you know who is hurting rather than watch the season finale of The Bachelorette. You supply your own example. It could be doing all of this, but there is this as well. And when you feel the tug, you know that God is near. See, what I'm going to do and what is the will of God to be done within all of this. So remember, won't you? Okay, mole people, you ready? Life is just a minute. Only 60 seconds in it forced upon you. Can't refuse it, didn't seek it, didn't choose it, but it's up to you to use it. You must suffer if you lose it, give an account if you abuse it. Just a tiny little minute, but eternity is in it. What are you going to do with your minute? Amen.